Everybody knows it. Toyota trucks are the stuff of legends. Rugged, durable, everlasting, Toyota makes trucks that just don't quit. And now, Toyota is driving that legacy toward the future with two of their most powerful trucks ever, the new Tundra and the all-new Tacoma.
In a half-ton Tundra, you can rule the roads from the comfort of a spacious cabin with connected tech and plenty of hauling power. The Tundra is ready to work hard and play even harder.
Or check out the all-new 24 Tacoma, redesigned and electrified to maximize your adventure. With a bevy of available off-road driving and power transfer modes, you will effortlessly crush the conditions. And with the Tacoma's reimagined interior, you'll do it in style.
And right now, your local Toyota dealer has more vehicles in stock and is making delivery on new vehicles almost every day.
So don't wait. Buy a Tundra or Tacoma today. Visit buyatoyota.com for deals and more.
Toyota, let's go places.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Well, the Padres just about traded for everybody except Scott and me. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on a Tuesday, September 1st. Where did the time go? Winter is coming. Frank Stanfield joined, as always, by Scott White. We wrapped up yesterday's pod saying we hoped one of our favorite teams, the Yankees or the Braves, would wind up with Mike Clevinger. And it was neither. What's going on, Scott?
It was neither because, of course, it was the Padres because we're all Padres now. We're living in a Padre sort of world. You're my Padre. I'm your Padre. We're all Padres. And that is our summation of the trade deadline.
You're my Padre. I was like, where's he going with this? Kind of reminds me of what's that? I'm a dude. You're a dude. We're all dudes. Good Burger. That's what that's from, right?
I swear, Frank, and sorry for blowing straight into the microphone, but I swear, Frank, we were talking just before we started about how you haven't seen Jurassic Park. You haven't seen any Terminator movie, any Lord of the Rings, like just these gaping holes in your Matrix. You'd only seen the second Matrix.
Of all of them.
And you're gonna whip out a Good Burger reference and think that's going to fly. That's poor timing on your part.
This is 100% deserved, and that just should tell you more about who I am and what I've watched throughout my life. So just, and I Googled Good Burger, and there's a picture of one of them with French fries coming out of his nose. So that's just where I'm at in my life. The types of movies that I've seen, Grandma's Boy, one of my favorites. Today on the show, by the way, we're recapping the trade deadline, giving you some fantasy winners and losers. Have some weekend leftovers, checking in on Monday's action. Team Name Tuesday, we have some Apple Podcast review questions, and I don't know how we're going to get to all of that, but let's try and do so. Of course, we will start, before we get to the trades, with a Monday standout. Take it away, Susan.
Oh my goodness gracious!
All right, I'm going to get us started here, Scott. While we're talking about Susan Waldman, let's talk about the Yankees and Gerrit Cole. Against the Rays on Monday, 5 innings, 8 hits, 4 earned, 4 walks, 7 strikeouts. Swinging strikes still there, 17 swinging strikes on 103 pitches. 2 more home runs allowed in this start. He has now allowed 12 home runs on the season, a career-high 47% fly ball rate. That doesn't bode well in Yankee Stadium. And his home run to fly ball ratio is now up to 22.6%, which is a career high. The 4 walks were the most since September 12, 2018 for Gerrit Cole. But I am here to calm you down because normally I'm the guy who overreacts and in the next podcast I spend all my time apologizing to people. I don't want to apologize anymore. The first 8 starts for Gerrit Cole last year, a 4.17 ERA, 8 home runs allowed. His final 25 starts, 1.99 ERA. This year, first 8 starts, a 3.91 ERA. I'm really not that worried. I just came here to calm people down in case they were, Scott.
I'm proud of you, Frank. That's a handy number you pulled out there, a demonstrative one, because I was going to say something similar without having even looked into it. That, you know, seven starts, right, for Cole? 7 starts, into a normal season, like, you're not going to bat an eye at any pitcher having a high 3 ZRA. That's just the way samples work. And it goes back to what I've been saying all along. What we've been saying all along is that there's going to end up being some weird looking statistics because this season is less than a little more than a third of a full length season. But that really shouldn't change your day-to-day evaluation of players, because predicting how those numbers are going to be contorted, like when they take a turn for the better, they take a turn for the worse, that there's no way of doing that. You just have to look at the skills. Are they intact? Yes. You know, he's been a home run prone pitcher even during his last two brilliant years with the Astros. So there are going to be stretches sometimes like this where his ERA gets inflated a little bit, but it's obvious the skills are intact, and I'm with you. There's nothing to worry about Gerrit Cole. He's my number three pitcher rest of season, and just keep riding him.
The one thing, I really don't like that the fly ball rate is up. Someone who has had some issues with home runs, allowing fly balls in Yankee Stadium, is pretty much a recipe for disaster. But I have confidence that those numbers will kind of regulate out to where they normally are over the course, hopefully, of this shortened season. And today was actually his eighth start, Scott. So we are eight starts in this season comparatively to the eight starts where he was last year. He struggled in his first eight starts last year. So I'm willing to give Gerrit Cole a pass. A Monday standout for you, Scott.
Monday standout for me. I am going to go with the one and only Greg Holland. Greg Holland, of course, would be Greg Holland getting the save for the Royals. Of course it would. It wouldn't be the guy we predicted, Scott Barlow. It wouldn't even be Josh Staumont, the crazy bat misser in that bullpen. It would be Greg Holland, the old guy who's getting by, but, you know, doesn't have the stuff those two have. And who knows? I mean, Greg Holland got a save before Trevor Rosenthal ever did. So, you know, maybe Mike Matheny is still feeling his way through this Trevor Rosenthal-less existence. But Scott Barlow worked the eighth inning setting up for Greg Holland. And I think automatically we have to consider Greg Holland the leading contender for saves in that bullpen now. Though I wouldn't want to stray too far from Barlow, because it would appear that he's the backup choice. And, you know, as we've seen from Matheny this year, these things could change pretty quickly.
Scott, does it matter that the Royals were down one zip at the time when Scott Barlow pitched in the top of the eighth inning? So it was one zip Cleveland. Scott Barlow came in for the eighth. The Royals took a two-run lead. They scored two runs. They took a one-run lead in the bottom of the eighth, and then Greg Holland came in to pitch the top of the ninth. Does that matter?
I don't know many closers who work the eighth inning when trailing. That's not a traditional role for, not a traditional scenario for a closer. So I don't think it suggests anything about Scott Barlow. I could see how maybe it would suggest that Greg Holland was just the guy they were able to get warmed up once they took the lead, and so he fell into the save that way. But like Jesse Hahn, who got the save on Saturday, he worked the seventh inning.
Yep.
Got two outs in the seventh inning for the Royals. So it's, you know, there's no indication it's him. Josh Staumont, I know he wasn't I know he worked Sunday and it was like the middle of the game. So it's not like they were saving him for the ninth. But, you know, Holland himself pitched the eighth Sunday. So I don't know. The only thing I can say for sure is that Scott Barlow was available and they didn't reserve him for the save, and that Greg Holland did get the first save, or no, actually the second, because of that Jesse Hahn save. But nobody took that seriously. Greg Holland got the save here on Monday, and you know, it's like a 60-40 thing for me right now. Not even that, because I'm not totally ruling out Josh Staumont. I don't know. It's a mess. Mike Matheny, what are you doing to us?
I'm enjoying hearing you just talk out your thought processes just like on the podcast. He's like,
Is it really that percentage? No, I'm not so sure. You know, Mike Matheny's kind of messing around with us.
Trying.
But that's the closer carousel.
I'm trying to crystallize this for everybody. And it's just, it's very cloudy. It's a cloudy gem.
I think we're putting a bow.
You got engaged recently, right? What are the four whatever for diamonds, like the four C's or something? Oh. Clarity is one of them. Color.
Oh, I know.
Carrots. And cut. I got it.
There you go. Woo! You didn't even need me to. I'm like, dude, I just cited a Good Burger movie. You think I'm going to know that? Like, there's no chance that's going to happen. All right, we're going to get back to Greg Holland in a little bit because we had some other closer movement at the end of the trade deadline on Monday. So kind of throw all these guys together and see which one we like most. But we mentioned Mike Clevinger, Greg Allen, and a player to be named later headed over to the San Diego Padres for Austin Hedges, Cal Quantrill, Josh Naylor, and three prospects. We know who Clevinger is. I don't think this really changes anything for him, right, Scott? Like, you're not going to move Mike Clevinger up because he moves over to San Diego?
No, I'm not. It's a little... the offense backing him is better.
Mm-hmm.
The competition, you know... AL Central is a great place to pitch, in L West.
Yeah.
Less so. But it's mostly contingent on Clevinger throwing strikes and missing bats. He hasn't done either as well this year as he did last year, and yet he has a low 3 ZRA. So, you know, I still feel pretty good about him. I feel like the Padres should feel great. Like, it was that trade was just ridiculous because we were talking yesterday, right? Would I give up Drew Waters for him? Or was that, I don't know if that was on the show or off the show, but I said, yeah, I'd give up Drew Waters. I'd give up Christian Pache. I mean, he has 2 years of control left, Clevinger does, after this year. And it's like the deal that the Indians took for him, the Padres just like dumped a lot of like excess parts on them. Like, yeah. It was a 6-for-1 trade. Not exactly, but it reminded me of a trade I'd make in like out of the park baseball when I'm trying to rip off the AI. Cause it's just like, if I throw enough bodies in there, eventually they'll have to say yes. And that's what it felt like this trade was for Clevinger.
You know what's hilarious about that is someone posted in the Facebook, the Fantasy Baseball Today Facebook group, that the San Diego Padres basically pulled a classic Frank 2-for-1, except it was like 6-for-1, basically.
Yeah.
In this trade.
So some of the names we know, right? It's like Austin Hedges. Do you have the names there?
Yeah, I don't have all the prospects' names, but I have Quantrill, Josh Naylor. The three prospects, and I think two of them were either top 10 or top 12 in the Padres organization, and then one was a little bit lower down. But,
yeah.
I mean, look, the fact that the Padres landed Mike Clevinger without having to give up one of Mackenzie Gore, Luis Patino, or C.J. Abrams is fantastic. It's just and their catching prospect. I think it's Luis Campusano. They didn't have to give him up either. So to land Clevinger without giving up any of those guys, or even like a Jake Cronenworth, who's like a young player who might turn out to be a stud. He looks like he is right now. It's a fantastic job by the San Diego Padres. And Scott, I thought the biggest winner of this trade deadline from a fantasy perspective was Zach Plesac, because now he's back in the rotation and will start Tuesday against the Royals. We were wondering what was going to happen. And this is kind of why I thought all along that the Indians might trade away Clevinger, is because they have another... He's pitched like an ace. I'm not going to call him an ace yet.
Three starts this year.
Three starts of an ace up the sleeve right now. Zach Plesac, 82% rostered. He's probably not available anywhere, but this should give people some calm, a reason to exhale now that Zach Plesac is back in the rotation.
Yeah, I bet in some of those Yahoo leagues he's available. And yeah, this is, you know, I'd been saying to hold on to him. He changed his pitch mix this year, throwing more strikes, missing more bats, at least through three starts. And obviously Cleveland was confident in what he could do for them being contenders and willing to trade away their, you know, one of their best pitchers in Clevinger. So excited about the return of Plesac. I agree with you. He's the biggest winner of the trade deadline. I have my five winners and losers up on the site. He's number one for me from the trade deadline, Zach Plesac.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And just last name I'll touch on from this trade, Josh Naylor, still just 23 years old, makes a lot of contact, career 288 hitter in the minors, has some pop. I imagine he'll play quite consistently for Cleveland, probably in one of those corner outfield spots. Any interest in Josh Naylor in a deeper league, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, good minor league track record, poor major league track record. So you could see how the Padres gave up on him. But it sounds like the plan is for him to play mostly every day in left, even though he's a left-handed hitter. So we'll get to see pretty quickly if he's going to sink or swim. It's a name to keep an eye on. Probably the single player who gains the most fantasy value from this trade.
Yeah, Naylor, I would put him in a similar kind of range as someone like Ty France, who we're hoping becomes an everyday player with the Seattle Mariners.
And it sounds like he will. It sounds like he's going to play a ton. Ty France, for those who don't know, he hit, I think, 399 with a 1272 OPS at AAA last year. PCL juiced ball, that hitting environment was ridiculous, but still nobody else put up numbers like Ty France did. And he's eligible at first, second, and third. I don't think he's an immediate rush out and grab him type because for those crazy numbers, it's not like he was some huge prospect, but definitely a name to remember and monitor his progress in the early going.
And I saw a quote today on Twitter from Jerry DePoto from the Mariners, and he's been trying for a while now to acquire Ty France. So if they're excited about him, it seems like they're going to give him every opportunity to succeed with the Seattle Mariners. The Reds acquired Archie Bradley from the Diamondbacks and Brian Goodwin from the Angels. Scott, who closes in Cincinnati?
It's got to be Iglesias. It's got to be.
I think.
Bradley's not very good.
Well, on the surface, you know, some people might look at Raisel Iglesias. He has a 5.50 ERA this season, but a 0.83 whip. So those numbers don't match up. He's a 2.28 xFIP, 15 strikeouts to just one walk. I think he's had two or three really bad performances for Raisel Iglesias. So that have kind of inflated the surface numbers, but everything underlying looks much better. So I tend to agree with you. I think Raisel Iglesias will be the closer. Archie Bradley is someone who knows the role of being a setup man quite well, and he has done it before, and he has excelled in that role. So I tend to agree with you. Iglesias is the guy in Cincinnati. Archie Bradley, the setup man. On the other side, in Arizona, who closes for the Diamondbacks?
I don't think there's any way of knowing, really. I think they don't even know yet. They're going to figure it out. Probably the leading candidates are Kevin Ginkle, Stephen Crichton, and trying to pull up the roster here, Junior Guerra.
Yeah.
Junior Guerra is 35, so it's not like, I don't know. He's probably a distant option. I mean, Yoan Lopez got a look there, I think, late last season. So it's pretty wide open. There isn't an obvious candidate to pick up there, and I wouldn't be investing much fab in it or anything right now.
Kevin Ginkle was a name that I liked coming into the season. I think he had two or three saves in the final month last season in September for the Arizona Diamondbacks, but he has been quite bad this season. His ERA is up over 7. So if you're just looking at numbers this year, I think Crichton is the one that should probably earn the first shot. 3.24 ERA over a strikeout per inning. He walks a decent amount. So does Junior Guerra.
Speaking of Jurassic Park, Crichton.
I wouldn't understand the reference, Scott. I've never seen Jurassic
Michael
Park.
Michael Crichton? He wrote the novel on which the movie's based.
Didn't read the books either.
It's only other Crichton I know.
Jonathan Villar was sent to the Blue Jays, Starling Marte to the Marlins. Any big takeaways here? I guess Starling Marte is a loser just because he leaves a better lineup and he joins a worse ballpark to hit in.
I mean, I don't want to just gloss over it because after Clevinger, Marte was by far the biggest name traded. And, you know, in terms of players being impacted in fantasy, though, I don't see huge repercussions here. It was interesting that the Marlins brought in Starling Marte, okay, they're buyers, while also shipping out Jonathan Villar, who was by far their highest drafted player in fantasy coming into the year. It's been the bad Villar at the plate so far. But, you know, even the bad VR runs, I'm a little worried about how this impacts his value going to the Blue Jays, because presumably right now he's filling in for Bo Bichette at shortstop. It doesn't sound like Bichette's far from returning. If VR doesn't heat up in the interim, you know, some people are suggesting he'll just take over for Travis Shaw at third base, maybe. But, you know, if he has a sub 700 OPS himself, I don't know that the Blue Jays are going to value VR like a fantasy player would. And I'd be worried that he'd lose playing time. He'd still play a fair amount kind of all over the diamond, but I'm not sure the at-bats are going to be there regularly for VR unless he really turns things around at the plate.
I was watching the Blue Jays game today, and on the broadcast, they said exactly what you just did. He'll fill in for Bo Bichette, and then once he returns, they imagine that Jonathan Villar would take over at third base. But they're just speculating, too. They don't know for sure. Jonathan Villar's 9 steals this season lead all of baseball. The Blue Jays actually run a little bit, so I don't think that will be an issue for him. I think that he'll still have the green light in Toronto, or Buffalo, rather. That's where they play. John Birdie replaced Jonathan Villar, and I imagine Birdie should play every day. He has a ton of eligibility for fantasy. He is 30% rostered, and he has 8 steals this season, Scott. So, like,
yeah,
I feel like his rostership percentage should be higher.
I don't know that he's going to play every day, because Asan Diaz is apparently applying to return, kind of right, like Nick Markakis did after opting out originally. And that was given as part of the impetus for trading VR. So, I mean, I don't know that Asan Diaz deserves to start. He, you know, power hitting prospect last year, got called up and was terrible. But it sounds like he's going to be in the mix here sooner than later, and Birdie might still bounce around. Like, I don't know that Birdie's a very good hitter either. So it would be a true steal specialist, even if he was playing, one that I have him in a few roto leagues, and I have a hard time justifying getting him in my lineup as much as I might need steals.
Caleb Smith was one of the names that came back to the Arizona Diamondbacks in the Starling Marte trade. Reminder that over the first 11 starts last season in 2019, he looked like a true breakout candidate with a 3.10 ERA and a ton of strikeouts. He's getting ready to return, 34% rostered. Any interest in Caleb Smith, Scott?
I want to say zero, but I'm not excitingly picking him up ahead of his return, because, like, yes, he was good for 11 starts and then came a hip injury, but like the ratios didn't necessarily support how good he was. Like, a ton of fly balls, not a good control pitcher. I don't know. I'm keeping an open mind on Caleb Smith, but I'm not an optimist when it comes to him. I'll put it that way. Related to that, and kind of bringing this to Monday's action, Trevor Rogers made his second start for the Marlins, went 5 innings, gave up 2 earned runs, struck out 5. 2 good starts in a row since joining the rotation. And now that Caleb Smith is not going to bump him out, it looks like Trevor Rogers has a job to stay. So, you know, if it came down to him or Caleb Smith, I might go with Rogers. I'm not saying he's must add, but that's kind of where I am with Caleb Smith.
For Trevor Rogers, he is just 6% rostered, so he is available in even the deepest leagues. His next 2 starts are expected to come against the Tampa Bay Rays and the Philadelphia Phillies. Some other trades: Mike Minor to the Oakland A's, Robbie Ray and Ross Stripling to the Blue Jays. Meh, I don't think this matters all that much. Taylor Williams, there was a buzzer beater trade that came out actually a little bit after the trade deadline. Taylor Williams, the closer of the Mariners, was traded to the Padres, where I assume he will set up in some capacity.
Yeah.
And they
he's done as a closer.
They had a save opportunity today, but Marco Gonzalez was just so awesome. He's like, nah, I'm just going to pitch a complete game. It's cool. But apparently, Yoshi Hirano was the one that was warming up in the bullpen when a base runner got on in the 9th inning. So I tend to think that Yoshi Hirano is probably the next man up in Seattle, Scott.
Probably. Of course, they moved Dan Altavilla already. They moved Austin Adams, who was on the IL anyway. So what happened to Matt McGill? I don't see him on the roster here.
I saw him pitch
he's
recently.
On the IL too.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, I mean, I don't really know who it could be other than Hirano. So I would, that's a pickup I'd feel more confident in than anybody in the Diamondbacks bullpen. I'd probably prioritize both Holland and Barlow over him, though. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, that was the next question. I agree with Holland. I still think the Royals will be better than the Mariners. I don't even know if that makes sense, but yeah, I don't think Hirano's all that great either. I'll go Holland. Yeah, no, I think what you said is right. Yeah, I'll go with both Royals guys, see how that kind of plays out ahead of
Yoshi. I do want to make a couple comments on the three starting pitchers here. Robbie Ray, Ross Stripling going to the Blue Jays after they already got Taijuan Walker. So they have a completely remade rotation now. Like, we know Robbie Ray, we know Ross Stripling have talent. So anytime you can get a different set of eyes on talent that has clearly gone awry, I think it can only be a good thing. The change of scenery argument. I obviously need to see something from both of them before I invest in them again. But, you know, the Blue Jays are making a strong push here and are counting on both of them to be a part of it. So something to monitor. Mike Minor, on the other hand, like, they're talking about moving him to the bullpen. They're not saying they're not doing it yet because they have a couple doubleheaders coming up. They need a six-man rotation for a while. But there are rumblings that Mike Minor is going to wind up in the bullpen.
The rest of the news and notes from Monday. Actually, there was a few other trades. They don't really matter for fantasy. David Phelps to the Phillies, Todd Frazier, Robinson Chirinos, and Miguel Castro to the Mets, Kevin Pillar to the Rockies, and Cameron Maybin to the Cubs.
Kevin Pillar.
Yeah.
Not excited about him, but I'm concerned about what it means for Garrett Hampson. Because he's mostly been playing center field. He's right-handed hitter like Pillar is, and hasn't been doing so hot. Mm-hmm. So here we go again with Garrett Hampson. I'm not optimistic about how this is going to end for him this season.
Some news and notes. Ronald Acuna was not in the Braves lineup Monday because of the right hamstring tightness. Yandy Diaz was removed from Monday's game with hamstring tightness. He was replaced by Hunter Renfro. Rockies placed prospect Brendan Rodgers on the 10-day IL with a right shoulder capsular strain. Chris Bryant could be activated off the IL Tuesday. He was dealing with a left ring finger sprain. Austin Meadows was out of the Rays lineup Monday due to a sore oblique. He didn't play Sunday either, and he's kind of not been great. So maybe this oblique is something that's been bothering Austin Meadows for a little bit longer than this. Charlie Morton will return from the IL Wednesday against the Yankees. The Pirates activated Colin Moran off the 7-day concussion IL Monday. Sticking with the Pirates, one of their top prospects, Ke'Bryan Hayes, will be promoted ahead of Tuesday's game. We spoke about him last week. He's not really someone we're excited about right now from a fantasy perspective, but let's just pay attention. Put him on your scout team. Let's see what he does with the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then, of course, the A's and the Mariners series, which was supposed to be played Tuesday and Wednesday, has been postponed for precautionary reasons. A member of the A's organization tested positive for COVID over the weekend. It was actually pretty obvious what was going to happen with that series. We spoke about it on yesterday's podcast. And you know what else is obvious? You don't need to be an expert to know that consolidating credit card debt into one low fixed rate can save you money. Start saving today with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Lightstream's fixed rate credit card consolidation loans start at 5.95% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. The application is 100% online, and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Look, I know it's tough to deal with credit card debt. It can be really overwhelming. Luckily, Lightstream can help. Here's what Robert and Kate had to say about their experience. This was the most hassle-free loan we have ever applied for. The application was received and approved in 1 hour and 4 minutes. Outstanding service is an understatement. Kudos to the staff at Lightstream. Our listeners can save even more money with an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount, go to lightstream.com/strike. That's lightstream.com/strike, STRIKE. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/strike for more information. Scott, there were a few leftovers from the weekend that we didn't get to yesterday, and just quickly wanted to run some of these past you. Luis Castillo, what gives? He drops to 0-5. He allowed 4 runs over the weekend, including 3 home runs against the Cubs on Sunday. His ERA is now 4.10. The people want to know what is going on with Luis Castillo. Scott, do you have an answer?
It seemed like more of the same to me. The home runs, like it's it's if everything else goes right for Castillo, it's like something else goes wrong. Because home runs, you know, he's an extreme ground ball pitcher. And I think he had only given up like 2 home runs all year. And then he gives up 3 in this game. Still gets his usual number of whiffs. It's gonna go right for him eventually. I know eventually might happen. You know, it might not happen before the season's over, but it might. It more likely will than not. So stick with him.
I agree. And, you know, to half the time when I set up the questions, I'm going to wind up agreeing with you. I just like to frame it that way. But the underlying numbers this season for Luis Castillo are actually better than they were last season. The swinging strike rate is basically the same, but the XFIP is lower. The hard contact rate is down. He's really struggling. His BABIP is 379. Last year it was 262. I just think things are going to get better. I looked into his fastball and his changeup this year. Fastball, 290 batting average against a 262 expected batting average, a 452 slug, a 390 expected slug. The changeup, 265 batting average this season, a 186 expected batting average. That is insane. A 431 slug on Luis Castillo's changeup, 293 expected slug. He has been extremely unlucky, and look, if it just turns out that it doesn't happen this season, I will be there to buy in on all the discounted Luis Castillo heading into next season.
Oh, yeah. By the way, it was just 1 home run in his first 6 starts and then 3 over the weekend.
Blake Snell was at the Marlins on Sunday, Scott, and he was fine, 5 innings, 2 runs, but they only let him pitch 75 pitches. Was there any reasoning behind this, or is it just the Tampa Bay Rays?
I don't know. I didn't watch the game. I don't know if it was a game flow thing. But, you know, his previous 2 outings, he was over 90 pitches in one, over 100 in the other. So it's not like he's not stretched out. I don't know. I mean, even during his Cy Young season, he was pulled prior to 6 innings more often than you might think. And maybe they just don't like him going. They don't like him facing the lineup a third time. I don't know. But, you know, I'm mostly viewing him as a must-start player now.
Well, is this gentleman a must-start player again? Because he went into Colorado on Sunday, and he bounced back. He needed it too. Chris Paddock, 6 innings, 2 runs, 0 earned runs. So defense kind of let him down a little bit in this one. 1 walk, 8 strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on 85 pitches, 17 first pitch strikes to 24 batters face. That's a 70% first pitch strike percentage, and that's exactly where it was at last season. I think if Paddock is going to be successful with mainly just the 2 pitches, it's going to be with elite control and command, not walking anybody, and of course getting ahead in the count, and I think that's exactly what he did in this start, Scott.
Yeah, you're right. That's going to be pivotal to his success, and he's still going to get burned by the long balls sometimes. I was not keen on starting him at Colorado because of that, because, you know, he's had some struggles recently because in particular, he gets burned by the long ball, but obviously it worked out. He's going to have more good starts than bad. I haven't shied away from him as a must-start option, even though his stock has fallen a little in my eyes this year, not so far that he's no longer must-start.
Let's check in on the action from Monday. First of all, check in on some stud pitchers. We had some great pitchers on the mound on Monday night. Jacob DeGrom against the Marlins. 6 innings, 4 runs. Only one of them were earned. Again, defense kind of let him down. 9 strikeouts. 31 swinging strikes. 31 swinging strikes for Jacob. Like, this is unheard of. I don't think you really need to say anything else outside of that. It's just, I wanted to let everyone know. 31 swinging strikes for Jacob DeGrom.
I think that's the highest number I've seen this year. And for the season, I'm going to say stuff anyway. For the season, I think Jacob DeGrom is his season-long swinging strike percentage is over 20% now, based on that performance. Like the leader last year, I want to say it was under 15%. Just to double check that, but I'll double check it right now. But like that just goes to show you how ridiculous he's been in terms of missing bats.
Yeah, swinging strike rate entering this start was 19%. So I would imagine it is over 20% now, and the swinging strike
percentage. Okay, so there were a couple closer to 20. My bad. DeGrom. Oh, no, I'm looking at... Never mind.
I just did the same thing.
I'll straighten this out. I accidentally pulled up this year's leaderboards.
I did the same exact thing.
Yeah.
But now I'm on 2019, and last year's leader was Gerrit Cole at 16.8.
There you go. Yeah.
So, Jacob DeGrom, he's pretty good. Didn't really need us to tell you that, though. Lucas Giolito in his encore to the no-hitter at the Minnesota Twins. Another one. Defense kind of let him down here. 5 innings, 4 hits, 4 runs. Only 2 of those were earned. 1 walk, 8 strikeouts, 24 swinging strikes on 94 pitches. Everything was working for Lucas Giolito in this one. Fastball, changeup, slider. I saw he had a ton of swinging strikes on all 3 pitches, Scott. I think it was just the defense kind of let him down, and that elevated his pitch count in the start.
Sure. Yeah, that seems right. And based on the way his previous 2 outings went, top 10 pitcher.
Max Fried, 5 innings of 2-run ball, 5 strikeouts. The ERA is 1.60. Scott, did you know that he is yet to allow a home run this season?
I did not know that. He does keep the ball on the ground, though. That is probably his best skill. He's actually kind of underwhelmed me with the strikeouts, the swinging strikes this year. Fried has, but you know, particularly given the pitching environment, you can't complain about a 1.60 ERA. Like it's probably between him, DeGrom, and Yu Darvish for the NL Cy Young race right now.
Yeah, and I would have had the trifecta too, man. If it, Frankie Montas, those were the 3. Those were the 3 breakouts. I had to leave one draft with at least Fried, Montas, or Gallen. Gallen and Fried doing their job. Montas, come on, man. Pick up the slack. Shane Bieber, 6 shutout innings on Monday against the Royals. 1 hit, 4 walks, 9 strikeouts. 7 walks over his last 2 starts. That's not really Shane Bieber-like, but still not allowing any hits and getting a ton of strikeouts. So I'm not worried. Tyler Glasnow at the Yankees. 6 innings, 6 shutout innings, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts, 11 swinging strikes on 97 pitches. His last 2 starts, 13 innings pitched, 2 walks, 22 strikeouts for Glasnow. That is the key. He just cannot get in trouble with the walks. When, you know, as long as he stays away from that, I think that Tyler Glasnow is going to be probably close to the pitcher you drafted him to be, a top 20 guy.
Yep, agreed.
Let's check in on some stud hitters. Juan Soto, double dong. That makes 11 home runs in 24 games a season. That's a 74 home run pace. Not that that was ever going to happen. But even before Monday, Soto has moved past Fernando Tatis for the most fantasy points per game this season. Trey Turner, 4 more hits, hit his 7th home run. He is now batting .377. I know the steals haven't been there, but when you couple the batting average with the 7 home runs and everything else that Trey Turner is doing, I'm kind of all right with him not stealing bases. Again, he's been great. Luke Voit hit his 13th home run. He's batting .301 with an OPS over 1,000. Rhys Hoskins, another one. 2 more hits, hit his 6th home run. He's batting .260 with a .946 OPS. And then Alex Verdugo, 3 doubles, all off Max Fried. Just a reminder that he can hit lefties. Verdugo's not really a stud, but I just kind of wanted to put him in this category. He's batting .306 with an .893 OPS. It's not too shabby. The one name that has been a stud, Scott, that I wanted to get your thoughts on, Brandon Lau. His last 9 games, he is 4-for-35. He's betting .129 with 2 homers during that span. What is going on with Brandon Lau?
I haven't checked on him in a while.
Or is this just part of the natural ebbs and flows of a fantasy baseball season? I will say, during the span, his BABIP is .105, and that does not seem sustainable.
Yeah, I'm mostly interested in seeing if his strikeout rate has gone up during this cold spell, because last year it was basically disqualifying at 34.6. I mean, that's Joey Gallo territory, and Joey Gallo, Brandon Lau is not, but 23.7 is where it is on the season. Dramatic improvement. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think a little above average in terms of strikeout rate. Yeah, he hasn't. I don't know. I think it's too early to back away from what I said about him earlier, him being a stud and breaking through. But I'm not totally comfortable with the direction he's heading either. Stick with him for now.
It's time to check in on some fringe two starters and how did they do in their first start on Monday. Marco Gonzalez mentioned it. Complete game. One earned run, one walk, 8 strikeouts. That makes 39 strikeouts to just 4 walks this season. The ERA is down to 3.09. Honestly, if you could still make trades, I would say sell high on Marco Gonzalez, but I would imagine most people either just passed their trade deadline or it was today while we're recording this. His next two starts, though, against the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks, no Starling Marte. I think that's a matchup that you can kind of attack. Marco Gonzalez, man, he's been awesome.
He has. It's mostly come in because he throws a lot of strikes. He's been throwing a lot of strikes. He did 2 years ago, too. Not that last year he was bad. It's just, you know, the strikeout rate wasn't very good and ERA was around 4, but he's an efficient pitcher who works deep into games sometimes. And if the strikeout rate's up a little this year, that's only going to help. I think Marco Gonzalez is shy of being must start. I would agree he's sell high if that's still a possibility, but you know, he's a decent pitcher.
Dakota Hudson. Ayo. What did you do with Dakota Hudson of 2019? Although, I guess he was still good last year, but the underlying numbers were just terrible. Monday, at the Reds, 7 innings of 2-run ball, 7 strikeouts, 0 walks, 12 swinging strikes on 95 pitches, 12 ground ball outs. He has now allowed 2 runs or less in 4 straight. Dakota Hudson, the ERA down to 2.71. His next start later this week is at the Cubs, and then next week, he's against the Tigers. He's 68% rostered, Scott. I think he's one of these two starters where the confidence is growing, and if he performs okay in his next start, I will be okay starting him next week against the Tigers.
Yeah, for that kind of matchup, it's probably fine. I still think he's more of a points league specialist. He was, among qualifiers, number one in ground ball rate last year. So that's why I harp so much on ground ball rate, because in an environment where, you know, the majority of offense comes in the form of home runs, preventing that can really keep the ERA down, but it comes at the expense of a high whip. His walk rate has been a little better this year, but it's still not good, Dakota Hudson. So his xFIP entering this game was 447. Yeah, I still see him as more of a points league specialist, but certainly when the matchups are right, like against the Tigers, that's a play you can make.
Rich Hill, not nearly as good as Dakota Hudson on Monday. 3 1/3, 2 earned, 4 walks, 2 strikeouts, only 65 pitches. He is 77% rostered. Scott, is it time to drop Rich Hill? Would you drop him for the names that we've mentioned recently? Michael Pineda, Dane Dunning, Tyler Malley, Davey Garcia. Is it time to drop Rich Hill for those names?
I think I'd drop him for Dunning. I could see dropping him for Pineda. Like, if you're pretty confident Hill's not going to be picked up in your league, why not drop him for Pineda? I'd rather see what Pineda does first, but you know, then you might have a fight on your hands if he's great in that first start against the White Sox. So I could see going ahead and making that move. The interesting one is Malley. I really think one development from Monday, obviously Malley didn't pitch, but Anthony Desclafani did, and he gave up 7 earned runs in 3 2/3 innings. It was his second abysmal start in his past 3, and I don't know how the Reds could justify keeping him in the rotation over Tyler Malley now. Of course, they're both in right now because of some upcoming doubleheaders, but eventually that's going to change. And then Wade Miley's in that rotation too, and I don't know why he deserved preferential treatment. So I'm hopeful one way or another Malley's in for good now. And yeah, I think based on that, I'd go ahead and drop Rich Hill for him too.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about my league mates picking up Rich Hill because at this point, I don't know what his upside is. He's not getting a ton of strikeouts. The walks are inflating his pitch count. He's not going deep into games. It doesn't seem like they really want him to face the third time through the order anyway, even if he were pitching well. I'm all right dropping Rich Hill for pretty much all these names. Davey Garcia, not exactly sure if he's going to remain in the rotation if he gets called up for the doubleheader for the Yankees on Friday, but it sounds like that's what they're going to do, and they probably should give him another shot based on how he pitched over the weekend. Germán Márquez was at home. You know what that means. You got bad Germán Márquez against the Padres on Monday. 5 earned runs. The ERA is now up to 4.88. Entering Monday, no surprise, he had a 6.87 ERA at home and a 2.66 ERA on the road. Scott, same question. Would you drop Germán Márquez for any of those names?
I think I'd drop him for Dunning. I think that's it, though.
So no, okay.
No so Pineda, gonna, no Malley.
So you just like, you're going to stream him on the road? That's the only way you could play him, right? It's like, we know the story about Márquez.
I guess so. I take it you disagree. I take it you'd rather.
Nah, it's just like the Rockies pitchers are so frustrating. Like, I want to like Germán Márquez. For years I've wanted John Gray to be a thing, but it's just, this happens all the time. And I would understand if someone who's just like fed up with Germán Márquez. So I'd be all right dropping him for Dunning. I think I'd be all right dropping him for Pineda as well. The other names, see what happens with Tyler Malley and Davey Garcia. Brad Keller. Where was this Brad Keller last week, huh? Ask you that, Scott. When I started him, huh? I started Brad Keller last week. He was crap, and he lost his 2-star week. What happens this week? Gains the 2 starts back. And then he was awesome. 6 1/3, 3 hits, 1 earned, 4 strikeouts, 1 run or less in 4 of his 5 starts. That 1 start was the one where I started him, Scott.
Yeah, I don't think you were alone there. He was a popular pickup for the 2-star week. He is... I mean, he's kind of like Dakota Hudson. He kind of faked us out early on because he was getting more whiffs and maybe his slider was new and improved. The last 2 starts, including this one, show it wasn't. He's really more of a ground ball pitcher. One with better control than Hudson, actually. So in a way, I might like him more than Hudson, but I do think of Keller, Brad Keller, like Hudson, as more of a points league specialist than somebody you're going to start in all formats.
All right, let's take a quick break here. Remind everyone to subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. We are approaching 1,600 subscribers. Thank you to everybody who has subscribed thus far. Let's see if we can get to 2K by, probably won't happen by the end of this fantasy season, but by the end of the year, can we make that happen? 2K, 2,500 subscribers on YouTube. Again, thank you to everyone who has already subscribed already. YouTube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, I got some waiver wire names I want to talk about from Monday, some bullpen notes, team name Tuesday, and a few questions from our Apple Podcast review. We'll do that here, Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You're ready, Bob.
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
We're checking in on the waiver wire. Garrett Cooper has homered in back-to-back days. This time it was off Jacob deGrom. Dual eligibility, 11% rostered. Scott, we mentioned the name yesterday. Do we need to prioritize Garrett Cooper a little bit more?
I mean, sure. Every time he has another good game, the interest level goes up a little bit. You know, part of it's I don't feel a lot of urgency at the positions where he's eligible, but, you know, especially considering Ryan Mountcastle is only like 30% rostered or something, and I'd definitely go with him eligible at those same two positions. But, you know, if he's already taken, if you're in kind of a deeper rotisserie league, Garrett Cooper has some offensive upside if he's going to play regularly. And I think he has been, right, since returning?
Yes, he has. Yeah. And he was available in a few 5 outfielder, 15-team roto leagues over the weekend. So I had some bids in on Garrett Cooper. I think I won him in maybe one spot. But, yeah, in those deeper leagues, for sure, I think people are kind of sleeping and forgetting about what we saw from Garrett Cooper last year. He was pretty good. Someone else who was pretty good last year and then fell flat on his face was Austin Riley, who got off to a slow start this season, but went 2-for-5 with 3 RBI on Monday. He now has 12 hits over his last 7 games. I'm trying to get excited over Austin Riley, Scott, but the Statcast numbers are kind of weird. The launch angle's way down. The hard contact is down. He's striking out a little bit less, so that helps. 38% rostered. Should that number be higher for Austin Riley?
I'm not sure. I think probably. I mean, this could be him breaking out. It could be. It's too early to say, but, you know, coming into Monday, 371 over his past 10 games, striking out less than a quarter of the time. I mean, if he's striking out less than a quarter of the time, that's going to mean big things for a guy with his kind of power bat. So maybe it's the start of something. Probably not. It's just really too early to say. And if you need a power hitter who's eligible at either third base or the outfield, of course, take a flyer, see where it goes. But it's just too early for me to say anything definitively.
We have a pair of Knicks, Nick Markakis and Nick Madrigal, back-to-back 3-hit games for Markakis. He has multiple hits in 3 of his last 5. Nick Madrigal, 2 more hits on Monday. He has multiple hits in all 3 games since returning. Scott, let's put these names all together now. Madrigal, Markakis, Riley, Cooper. How would you rank those 4?
It would depend somewhat on need on the first 2, but I would go Madrigal 1, Austin Riley 2, Cooper 3, Markakis 4. Markakis, I'm not confident how consistently he's going to play, and of course he provides very little in the way of power or speed.
He's batting 368, which is just standard Nick Markakis. He's always going to hit for a high batting average. But like Garrett Cooper.
Yeah, not 368, like 280. Right. Yeah.
Someone that can help you out in those 5 outfielder leagues. Nick Madrigal has been pretty impressive thus far. I want to see him run a little bit more, but I've liked what I've seen. Some bullpen notes. Anthony Bass allowed 2 runs in extras, which of course start with a runner on base. Scott, the next Blue Jays save opportunity will go to blank.
It'll go to Blue Jays, Anthony Bass, I guess.
Rafael Dolis, no love?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I think they're just biding their time till Ken Giles gets back at this point.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to settle on any one guy.
Remember what I said about Brandon Workman yesterday looking pretty good? Yeah, me neither. I don't remember that. 1 inning, 4 hits, 2 hits, 2 earned, and 2 strikeouts. He allowed a home run to Juan Soto. But it's like, how can you blame someone who allows a home run to Juan Soto right now? The guy's on pace for 74 home runs over the course of a full season. Ever since I made fun of the Tampa Bay Rays, by the way, for using random relievers, Diego Castillo has 3 straight saves. He is 33% rostered. Scott, let's put Diego Castillo, Greg Holland, Scott Barlow, and Yoshi Hirano, all in a hat. Which name are you pulling out?
Well, it's random.
No.
If they're all in a hat.
Yeah. That's... All right. Which one would you want to pull out?
This may be dumb to say, but I'm going to go with Diego Castillo because I'm confident he's good enough to fill the role. And you know, last three saves for the Rays. The thing, like, people forget this, but eventually Emilio Pagan became like the guy for the Rays. This is never announced, but every single save opportunity he was getting for like the last 3 months. So like they're capable of deciding on a closer, and maybe this is the start of it for Castillo. I don't think Holland is the best reliever in his bullpen. I don't think Hirano's a very good reliever to begin with. So yeah, I'm going to go with Diego Castillo.
And Scott White just jinxed it here on the podcast. You heard it. That means a Fantasy Baseball Today listener will get the next Rays save opportunity. Taylor Rogers allowed Edwin Encarnacion to reach on an error. Well, I guess it wasn't his fault. But then a single to James McCann, a double to Luis Robert. Danny Mendick struck out. And Nomar Mazara, a two-run single. You add that all up. Taylor Rogers gave up some runs. So he hasn't really been great this year. We'll see if it affects anything. Probably not. They've seemed pretty loyal to Rogers to this point. Team Name Tuesday, Scott. Continue to send these in. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com. This one's from Colin. Granky with no brim. Do you know where this is from?
I don't know that reference, no.
So apparently there is a viral video of a gentleman wearing a Yankee fitted cap with no brim. And this is how his friend reacted.
Whoa! Yankee with no brim!
So it's, whoa, Granky with no brim.
Okay. All right.
I had to do my research, admittedly. I saw
the
emails.
That's a little too online for me, and I'm online an awful lot.
I was like, what is this? Granky with no brim? And then the Yankee video came up. So there you go. The other one he sent in, the Solaire flares.
Okay. Yeah, that's, we've had that one before, but that's good.
It's a little Dragon Ball Z. Watch Dragon Ball Z, Scott? Have you ever?
No.
No? Give it a shot. You watch some anime, right? Some Death Note?
Death Note is very good. I will vouch for Death Note from now until my name is written on the Death Note, but I don't know. Maybe I'll watch Dragon Ball Z someday.
It's pretty good.
Maybe.
Watch it with the kids, man. These are from Michael. Okay. Be like that.
Okay. Yeah, because that's the Astros pitcher who's probably not going to have a job for much longer. Yeah.
Oh, far show.
It's kind of a stretch.
The final one, arise for the judge.
Yeah. Yeah. That works.
From my buddy Joe. All right, this is the last one. Dob knack it till you try it.
Dob knack it till you try it. Also kind of a stretch, but I like it. My brain would have never gone there.
I like it too. It's actually something I just walk around and say to my fiance at times. Don't knock it till you try it, you know? Like whatever. Apple Podcast review questions. Yeah, Star Wars, right?
Because she's never seen Star Wars.
And then she could say, you know, Jurassic Park, Terminator, don't knock it till you... I don't knock those things. I just haven't seen them. We got some Apple Podcast review questions. Continue to drop those in there. Leave us 5 stars. We really appreciate it. This one's from DRJ4 Esther. I don't know if the 4 is supposed to represent a letter here. But anyway, 12-team head-to-head league. Jake Cronenworth or Ozzie Albies at second base rest of season?
I mean, I'm supposed to factor in the timetable here. Like when Albies gets back, I'd rather have Albies, of course. But... we don't know when he's coming back. So I think I have to say Cronenworth because of that. There's not much season left.
Drop someone on your bench, pick up Ozzie Albies, and hold on to Jake Cronenworth. That's what I said.
Yeah.
But if I had to choose one rest of the season, I would go Ozzie Albies. From ATJW97. Sounds like a radio station. Grade the trade. Points league. Walker Buehler and Rick Porcello for Tyler Glasnow, Taylor Rogers, and Garrett Richards. I picked up Emilio Pagan with that roster spot. This was a couple of days ago.
Sounds like I want to be on the Buehler side. Mm-hmm. Depends how desperate your save situation is, because you're getting Rogers and Pagan out of it. Mm-hmm. But I think most, you know, 8 times out of 10, which I guess would be 4 times out of 5, I would take the Bueller side.
I agree. This was from TKO Joe, 24. Ian Anderson, Zach Plesac, Tony Gonsolin, or use waivers on Dylan Bundy. Damn, someone dropped Dylan Bundy in your league? Ian Anderson, Plesac, Gonsolin, Bundy. Rank them, Scott.
Bundy, Plesac, Anderson, Gonsolin. So I guess you're dropping Gonsolin for Bundy. Though, it's worth mentioning, Gonsolin a sneaky winner from the trade deadline, too, since the Dodgers shipped out Ross Stripling.
That is a good point, and I agree with you. From John T. Inconchi, Points League, where I'm prioritizing roster spots for pitching. How do you weigh position eligibility when evaluating batters? Say player A has one position, and player B is 75% as productive, but plays 2 to 3 positions. Who do you prefer?
It depends how deep the league is and how, like, how easily can I find a replacement at a position where, you know, maybe I wouldn't need that versatility from the versatile player so much. So I know that's not an easy answer for you, but I think it would have to be more like 90% of the production, even in a deep league scenario, for it to count equally for me to the, you know, the higher producing guy. Mm-hmm. So 75%, not enough.
Yeah. I was going to say, I almost always will take the player with one position, even if I need a different position. Like, I'll take the more valuable, yeah, more productive.
There's always avenues to ones that you're not even going to foresee. I mean, versatility is so common in today's game that people are picking up eligibility all over the place all the time.
Yes, the second question, how would you rank these players moving forward? Miguel Sano, Jake Cronenworth, Hunter Dozier, Ryan Mountcastle, Yandy Diaz, and Dylan Moore.
Going forward, I'm going with Jake Cronenworth, Miguel Sano, Ryan Mountcastle, Hunter Dozier, Yandy Diaz, Dylan Moore.
I like it. Depends what the format might be. I might go Sano ahead of Cronenworth if it's not a points league, but those are the only two that I might differ from. I like the rest there. To stream or not to stream for Tuesday, Scott. Must starts, Sonny Gray, Aaron Nola, Patrick Corbin. Would you start Kwang Hyun Kim at the Cincinnati Reds?
I don't think I would. Not totally sold on that, even though his last two starts were good.
Dallas Keuchel at the Minnesota Twins.
Tough matchup, but I think you have to. It's just been money all season.
Michael Pineda versus the White Sox in his return.
Yeah, I'd rather sit back and watch this one, though. You know, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful he has a good start.
Eliezer Hernandez versus the Toronto Blue Jays.
I'm good with that.
John Lester at the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Not good with that.
Chad Kuhl on the other side against the Cubs.
Nope.
Masahiro Tanaka versus the Tampa Bay Rays.
I would not do that.
Ian Anderson at the Red Sox. Yeah, boy.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. That's a homecoming for him, too.
Josh Lindblom versus the Tigers.
Come on. No.
I almost want to just because it's the Tigers, but you're probably right. Josh Lindblom has been not great. John Gray at home against the Giants in Coors Field.
Nope.
Nope, nope, nope. And Julio Arias at home against the Starling Marte-less Diamondbacks.
Sure, let's do it.
Let's do it. He is Scott White. I am Frank Sample. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.